We had this narrative that we saw ourselves in the future like a Nike of kids. But you know, the one thing that hasn't changed is our obsession for being on the front line. We celebrated and welcomed different types of, you know, quirky, creative folks because we're quirky ourselves. Yeah. It was an epic failure. We made every mistake in the book. We hired the wrong people, had the wrong software, the wrong strategy, and the wrong tech stack. Everything was wrong. We shut down the office, turned off the lights, fired every person, and lost around $13, $14 million.
Welcome to The Moment, a new podcast by Canadian Business and Quill Podcasting. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Maganoy, the publisher of Canadian Business, and I'm co-hosting this podcast with Fatima Zaidi, the CEO and founder of Quill.
We're talking about the not-so-glamorous side of startup life, the moments we don't always get to hear about, the time when founders had to make a sharp pivot, start over from square one, or ditch an idea entirely. These are the real stories of what it takes to make it as an entrepreneur.
Each week, we're welcoming a new entrepreneur to talk about that moment where they were faced with giving up or powering through.
Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts. Today, we're joined by Anton Robbi, a well-respected voice in the toy industry and a titan in the Canadian entrepreneurial space. Anton partnered with two friends in 1994 to launch Spin Master and served as co-CEO for 28 years. Today, he serves as the chair and is an active voice in the company's strategy, vision, and values. Spin Master has grown to international offices in more than 28 countries and is well known for their award-winning brands like Paw Patrol and Hatchimals, which are familiar favorites for many parents who are tuning in to today's episode.
Anton was recently inducted into the Toy Industry Hall of Fame along with his partners in 2023. And he has played a foundational role in 25 acquisitions for Spin Master, including Tech Deck, Gund, Rubik's Cube. He's known for his unconventional approach to all things people. He's a self-proclaimed student of mindset. His outside-of-the-box thinking is going to be really interesting. It's going to be great to deep dive this. So let's jump into the conversation now.
Hi, Anton. Welcome to The Moment. We're so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
So we're here to hear about your founder journey, the good, bad, and the ugly. The people that are tuning in weekly are folks who are entrepreneurs, aspiring business owners, young professionals, and we want to hear how you made it, but we also want to hear the story leading up to it. We know it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so let's go back to 1994. What gave you the idea to launch Spin Master, and what were the initial days like?
Most people, when they think of Spin Master and the origin, they think of the Earth Buddy. In 94, Renan's grandmother, she was visiting from overseas, and she brought in her purse this little cute ball that was made out of sawdust, grass seed, and nylon. You put it in water, and it grew grass from its head. And we called it the Earth Buddy.
That's so cute. I feel like they had trolls like that back in the day.
Yeah, and so what we did is we took it apart in Renan's mother's kitchen, and we made samples for Mother's Day. We went on to Yonge Street, which for those who don't live in Toronto is our main street in Toronto, and we had no permit, no license. We put a picnic table on the street, and we had a live sample, so it sold out. Then we started selling to other retailers. We walked around, sold it to gift store chains and other stores, put it on consignment to get it in. A couple months later, we get this multi-million dollar order from Kmart US.
Oh, wow.
About 4 months later. Everyone, they think that was the defining moment of Spin Master, but they're totally wrong. The defining moment of Spin Master was the three of us, Benny, Renan, and I, coming together. And in the early days, there was every joke about how opposite we were. People were like, you guys are like a rock band.
You're just friends? Like, you were friends prior to launching Spin Master? Okay, so you already had a pre-existing relationship.
Renan and I did. We knew each other from 8 years old, summer camp.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happened was the defining moment was about the who, not the what. And we all had totally different skill sets, as opposite as you can imagine, totally different competencies, different style. We were quirky, weird, and to say different is a understatement.
I feel like that's a recurring theme in this season's podcast, which is the defining moment is the people that you decide to go into business with or decide to get into bed with, because ultimately that is the game changer, which is really, it's an interesting It's interesting that that's what you led with, that that was the defining moment. And so right off the bat, after the multi-million dollar order from Kmart, was it just smooth sailing or?
Oh, no. So in 97, we had relationships with the retailers from the Earth Buddy, and Renan, he had a moment where he was following the Grateful Dead in a Westerfelia van, and he knew about the devil sticks, and they started to become trendy. So we manufactured them locally, put them in some retailers, like I said, that we knew. And then we heard about the American Toy Fair in New York. So we fly down to New York, and you know, we're meeting with agents, reps, all those different companies, and we get this offer in 97 for a $100 million toy company to distribute the devil sticks. We turned it down, Fatima, if you can imagine that.
$100 million?
No, the company. We turned down their, because they wanted to be the distributor. And the reason why we turned it down is we came back, and at that time, Benny was friends with Brian Irwin's daughter, Jenny, which Irwin Toy was like the largest distributor. So we were having conversations about the, you know, our strategy, our vision. Where did we see Spin Master in the long term? And the three of us were totally aligned. The future of Spin Master was about innovation, innovation, innovation. So for us, we turned down the offer to be a distributor because we knew to light up the innovation and to ignite the innovation that we needed to be direct in America. I remember this dinner with Renan and Benny. We had this narrative that we saw ourselves in the future like a Nike of kids or an Apple of kids, where we were innovating, being disruptive, leading the world for kids in innovation. And we knew that design, engineering, marketing, and all that stuff locally in America was critical. That's when the vans, you know, that's what people talk about, the Spin Master vans, because out of necessity, we didn't have money to afford marketing. I flew down to the US and I met with KB Toys and Toys R Us in the Northeast. I got orders for the devil sticks, the juggling sticks. You know, they were three-piece juggling sets. And then from those, they shipped it into the store. So we're like, the stuff, we need to make sure that we're marketing and it's got to sell. So we rent like 5-6 vans. We put a picture of Renan on the side of the van flipping the sticks. And we hired friends of friends. I still bump into people. They're like, you know, my friend used to work with you, work for you on those van tours in the Northeast. And we went into the stores, did experiential, like grassroots marketing. And what's amazing is, out of necessity, because we had such a small marketing budget, how far grassroots marketing and how far that helped sell the product, doing the demonstrations in the stores.
Talk about getting scrappy. 1994 was a different time.
Yeah. So it sounds like you, when that offer came in, you could have become a different company if you'd accepted that.
Exactly.
Wow. Everyone always talks about innovation when it comes to businesses. And then people will go and they'll innovate and it just doesn't work out, becomes kind of like, it could become a failure, et cetera. So when you have this lens, we're about innovation, you're going to go drive innovation. Like, there were probably moments where it wasn't working out. So how did you turn those moments into opportunities for growth?
For us, fostering an environment of creativity and innovation has always been the foundation of the company, right? I mean, we live by a simple but really crucial rule at Spin Master. Ideas come from anywhere and anybody.
So I love that.
Yeah, take a look in the... I got to tell you this story, this example. So it's around 24 years ago, Benny and I were driving to Rochester to see one of our largest accounts for the Devil Sticks. It was a gift store chain called World of Science. They were in the malls. They had about 130 stores. So we're driving down and we go out for lunch with Fred Klauke, the owner of World of Science. We go into the store in the malls and we're out for lunch. And I said to Fred, what's your number one selling product in the chain in units? So then he pauses, he laughs, and I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen here? And then he's like, the frog beside the cash register. He says it costs $1 for the frog. You put the frog in water and it grew 10 times its size. It was like this rubber huge frog. It was like this size.
Kids are so easily entertained.
These toys are reminding me of all these awesome things I had when I was a kid.
But then, so we're driving home, and then Benny's having these ideation brilliance, blue sky, and Benny's like, okay, let's take the frog, turn it into a dinosaur, put an egg around it so that the dinosaur, when it grows 10 times its size, it will break open. They'll have the element of surprise, hatching, bust open the shell. And Benny looks at me and he's like, we got to create a whole line of Grow Things novelty products under $10.
I mean, it worked.
Well, talk about work. Fast forward 3 years later, we had invoiced over $40 million at wholesale in the Grow Things line. We had Grow Things Aliens, Grow Things Tarantula. We had like so many, we were pitching Grow Things for licenses. There's a crazy story about the Grow Things Godzilla pitch. And you know, the thing that is super cool about Spin Master is there are hundreds of stories where ideas come from anywhere and anybody. I mean, we've had moments where we've been driving in a taxi and ideas pop up with an inventor. Or like Benny was in Nuremberg in the back in Germany in the toy fair, like in the last hall, the guy didn't even have a booth. We found moon sand and Mundo. And to amplify the ideas and really to fuel the ideas, we've always had this environment where, let me say simply, is when we founded the company, people would come in for interviews with baseball hats or ripped jeans. And for us, we celebrated creativity. We've really amplified the creativity and the ideas come from anywhere, celebrating people, okay, who probably wouldn't have gotten a job at Mattel or Hasbro in the early days.
Right.
They wouldn't have gotten through the doors.
I feel like we talk to a lot of founders here, and I like really mean this when I say this. You have the coolest job.
Thank you.
You have to be very just aware of everything around you to have the ability to, that's like, it sounds like these ideas are like lightning in a bottle over and over and over again, which is incredible. But then the other piece too, the curation. I just find that what you're curating and the licensing you're doing is just really, really spot on, always of the moment.
But Jason, I'll tell you, we've had a lot of failures.
I'd love to,
yeah, love to hear one. About those.
Yeah, because you said in the beginning, you want, you know.
Good, bad, and ugly.
Okay, so over 20 years ago, our office was down there on Front Street. That was like our first, you know, headquarters. In my office, I can see right now, okay, over our, I had a shelf with all of our, with a dozen failures, Key Charm Cuties, Don't Free Freddy, Chattering, Zip Flyer, and the list goes on and on. This is about 20 years ago. And the reason why I put the failures right there so I could see them every day, so that we'd make sure we wouldn't make the same mistake twice. Right, like for the Zip Flyer, which was like a kite, the packaging was this large, and the mistake was it wouldn't fit on a planogram on a large retailer like a Walmart or a Target.
Right.
So we never made that same mistake again.
The shelf space was the issue.
Exactly. So that was a learning from the Zip Flyer. And then we had a learning from Don't Free Freddy. And for us, the learnings, we would have it front and center, visually see it daily, and talk about it. But Jason, fast forward to about 7-8 years ago, we're designing our headquarters here on King Street. I said to the design team, I'm like, the failures are coming out of my office and I want them publicly in the halls on the wall. We have the wall of failures here. And when we give people tours at Spin Master, that's where people stop and spend the most time. There's a like a little glass of the product and then a description of what the learning and the failure was.
I want a tour of your office. I'm going to come down.
Yeah. For sure.
Come down and come visit.
We need to get you some toys.
Yeah, Hatchimals, Paw Patrol, there's a list.
But so you have these failures. Aren't you sometimes ahead of, like, it sounds like you're ahead of the curve a lot of the time. And sometimes the failure, could it be just you're ahead of the curve? Can those failures become really popular now in 2024?
Well, let's go back to failures and your question on ahead of the curve, right? So one of the biggest failures in the company history that no one knows about from the first 20 years is Tech Deck Live. So we acquire Tech Deck about 17, 18 years ago, which are the miniature finger skateboards. And there's a vision to take the well-known brand of Tech Deck, the skateboards, and create a video game for iPhones. This was, again, think ahead of our times, as you say, Jason. So we set up Tech Deck Live in Los Angeles, a studio. Fast forward a year and a half later, it was an epic failure. We made every mistake in the book. We hired the wrong people, had the wrong software, the wrong strategy, the wrong tech stack. Everything was wrong. We shut down the office, turned off the lights, fired every person, and lost around $13, $14 million. And this is like 15, 16 years ago. That was a lot of money for us at that time. And the thing about the failure there, it didn't deter us from still taking risks, and it didn't deter us from the strategic relevance of being digital first and the digital space. Because then, fast forward 7, 8 years later, we acquire Toca Boca in Sweden, Stockholm, and it's just like a huge part of our success now. It's thriving. They have 50 million monthly active users, and Toca Boca is the number one app to kids worldwide. So what most people would be like, you fail with Tech Deck Live, lose just under $15 million. People were like, you'd never get back into the digital space. But when we acquire Toca Boca, the failure from Tech Deck Live was we had the wrong team. In Sweden, they had the art form, they had the expertise, the domain expert. Like, they were just...
Right.
Yeah, they were 200 people. Exactly.
Makes sense.
So for us, when it comes to failing, going back to your question, is we know how to fail fast. We know how to really capture the learnings, share their learnings, and talk about it and be vulnerable. And then for me, what I've discovered is there's a gift in every moment. And that's why I just have such a positive energy for adversity.
I love that. I also want to congratulate you because recently you and your partners were inducted into the Marketing Hall of Legends in Canada. Congratulations. You know, 1994, you were, you know, co-CEO for 28 years, and now you're the chair today, playing an active part in the strategy and vision of the company. How has the marketing evolved? Like, in 1994, you were, you know, taking pictures of your partner juggling on Yonge Street and slapping it across your van for promo. How has the marketing evolved since then? And curious what you've done to sort of stay on top of trends and innovate.
Speed. When we founded the company, Fatima, we would film a commercial 6, 7 months ahead, put it on Saturday morning cartoon shows, and 80% of our marketing mix was traditional TV. Today, we're changing content daily on social media, and less than 20% of our whole marketing is a traditional TV. It's completely polar opposite.
Right.
But you know, the one thing that hasn't changed, you know, when it comes to marketing, is our obsession for being on the front line and really listening to consumers. So my partner, Renan, he flies back to Toronto all the time, and he's like telling us stories about being in the airport. So when he's in the airport and he sees kids playing like on their iPhone, he asks parents permission if he could speak to the kids. And then he finds out what the kids are playing. What are they like? What are they not like? And he comes back to the office and he starts telling us stories about this kid playing a Roblox, what game. So we are obsessed being on the front line, listening to consumers and adjusting things daily.
There's something really incredible about the beginning of this journey. It's like, you know, you're on the road, you're driving. It sounds like you're moving furniture. You're in the middle of it. 28 countries now, you're huge. So people want to get there when they're starting their journey. They're starting their entrepreneurial journey. So what advice do you have for someone? Like, you know, they have this really great idea. They want to go out there. They might not embrace failure the way you do.
Right.
And they're a little more risk averse. So what advice would you have for someone as they're beginning that journey?
Know thyself, self-awareness. You know, as you start to plan your career and you're thinking 5, 10 years from here, Jason, you need to be as clear as possible on your unique ability. What's the one thing that you're better than most others, that you're passionate about, that you're just so gifted at? Once you know thyself, and then you think about taking the leap, and whether it's opening your own business or a career move, then you can take that and see what's missing and then surround yourself, right? Whether it's finding a partner that covers off or just hiring people around you that cover off on things that are not as natural for yourself. When you look at that and put it in the example of Spin Master and Bakugan, about 17, 18 years ago, we saw this invention of this marble that transformed. We knew, and at that time there was no entertainment division at Spin Master. So we knew ourselves that in order to make Bakugan successful, it required entertainment. So Renen, he flew to Japan, and he goes and he sits down with TMS, Japanese number one animation company in the world. We sit down with Chorus and say, you guys are great at broadcasting. So we put together, you know, Sega, Chorus, TMS, and we created this partnership, this rev sharing. And that's a great example about knowing thyself, finding others who have equities that you don't have, finding the best in the world and bringing them on. And, you know, Bakugan did over $1 billion at wholesale when we launched it.
That's amazing. Well, I think we have time for one more question before we move on to the founder's toolbox section. And this is a question that I ask every single entrepreneur we speak to. It's how we sort of end the interview portion of the episode. And it's a question that I've actually borrowed from Guy Raz at How I Built This, because I'm just so curious to hear everyone's response. What do you attribute your success to at Spin Master?
I think the company is just this celebration of diversity of thought and having ideas and people and creativity coming from just the most unexpected places.
And do you feel like you've been lucky along the way as well, or right place at the right time, or would you attribute all of that to merit?
There's been moments, but there's a lot of hard work. Yeah. I just don't believe in the word luck, but of course we've had some. What I advise people is fear is good. When you're starting to experience a little bit of fear, that means you're about to take action. That means you're about to take risk. Without risk, you're not getting ahead. And I always say to my girls, get comfortable with the uncomfortable. The second thing about fear is to be present with fear. Stare it down. Like when you're experiencing fear, don't dismiss it. Sit in the mud. Just be present with the fear, because it's telling you something. And there, it could be telling you something important for you to make a decision, or it could just be the puppy dog inner voice, which you need to just dismiss quickly. And the last thing about fear, which is applies to everything, is the word practice. I am obsessive to be a better version of myself in anything in my life, and there is nothing I've improved that I haven't turned into a practice. I have been deliberate, intentional, disciplined, and formed a practice to improve anything. And for those who are experiencing fear, they need to find micro moments to start to experience the fear. And the best part is they'll see the benefits. They need to experience the benefits themselves. It's about experience. You can't just listen to a podcast. You need to experience it yourself. And once you practice putting yourself out there, you're going to be able to really welcome fear and grow your career to another level.
It's that long journey. Entrepreneurship is a long journey, and there are good days, bad days, some terrible, terrible days. How do you get through those terrible days?
When I think about my toolbox, I would not be where I was today without my toolbox. No question. I have three toolboxes. I have a box called Mindset Reflections, one called Feedback, and one called Domain Experts. So Domain Experts, instead of having one mentor, I believe in having many mentors. Because if I'm having a problem on people, I'll call person X. I've had over 20 mentors, and I change them up. And I recommend for others to have multiple mentors depending on the subject matter. But I got to tell you, I am so obsessive and a little bit overboard when it comes to seeking out domain experts. You wouldn't believe this, but before I got married, my wife Alana says to me for the wedding, should we have chicken or fish? And what music should we play? And I'm like, let's call Melissa. She still hasn't forgiven me for that. I've driven my partners crazy when I've been in meetings and I'm like, let's call this buyer from Walmart who retired.
So you basically are tapping into people who know more than you, which I think is brilliant.
All the time, obsessively. So that's my one toolbox. And then my other toolbox is about feedback. I'm a feedback animal. And I've had 360s. I'm writing this book. And the pivotal moment in my book is this first 360 I had in 1999, where I was super humbled and it really knocked me down. But for me, the way I the way I handle feedback differently is the frequency I get feedback live. So for example, 8-9 years ago, I fly down to LA to do a staff meeting, and Ronnie recalls for the story for the book. He's like, Anton, you finished the staff meeting. You came right in my office and you said, how did I do? What could you do better? What could I have done better? So I'm daily walking out of meetings and I'm saying to people, even people who report to me are levels below, because I don't care about the levels. I'm like, how did we do? What could we do better? So my advice to others is feedback is a gift, and get feedback live in a constant flow, because with each feedback, there's so much nuggets and it's an opportunity. But let's get to the third toolbox, which is being the most transformative toolbox of my life, which is around mindset and reflections. So when 3.5 years ago, when the CEO Max came in, I started to have a little bit more time on my hands. So then I doubled down in mindset and reflections. I went to 40 Years of Zen in Seattle, David Asprey, neurofeedback. I was in pods. I did silent retreats, meditation. You know, I did mushrooms once in Costa Rica for enlightenment and just to enhance my self-awareness. And I started speaking to psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists. And for me, that's when I started to really gain like a lot of tools. So what I mean by that, let me be specific. When I'm at Spin Master and there's some adversity or the pressure's on, I know how to, in the moment, create a reframing exercise in my brain. So for me, this next phase of my life is the things I've been learning about mindset and reflections. And I've been super fortunate and super grateful to be able to have the time to really go deep in things like psychology and psychiatry and neuroscience.
Our final section is called the Rapid Fire Round, and here we really want to get to know you. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and you're going to have to rapid fire the responses. So one word, one sentence, and we want it to be as, I would say, raw in your instincts as possible. Great. So what's one thing people don't know about you?
I struggled in school, academically.
If you could learn one skill, what would that be?
Humor.
What's one mantra you like to live by?
Change or die. The only thing constant in life is change. Get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Mine's get rich or die trying. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Feedback is a gift.
Biggest pet peeve?
Two. One is people who don't follow up when they say.
Okay.
And the other part is those who join the company and who are acting too corporate. I want them to be more their authentic self. The more informal we are, the better the creative and the ideas will flow.
What's one thing you wish you knew when you were 19?
Self-awareness. Heightened self-awareness of myself.
What's the hardest thing about growing your company?
People.
And describe living in Canada in 3 words.
More than 3 words is one of the best countries in the world to raise kids.
Well, thank you so much for being here. It was such a pleasure sitting across from you and learning your story. I know that you're working on a book, so we're really excited to follow that journey. And it's just been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Anton said it himself. The key moment for Spin Master early on was when he and Ronan took up shop with Earth Buddy. So when it comes down to, for him, is who you choose to work with. Anton cannot be any more different than his business partners, and together they have created something fantastic. So one of the things that we talked about is just at the beginning of the process, who goes on the journey with you? Who goes on that journey with you? So my question is, when you started your business, how did you decide who to bring on? And how has that changed in terms of how you hire, how you find talent for your business now?
Honestly, this is like my superpower. If people ask me, like, what did you get right? I would say it's the team that I've chosen to hire and the fact that our turnover is next to nothing. I think that entrepreneurship is a roller coaster. You know, there are days where you're on top of the world and there are days that you've hit rock bottom. And I would say in the early days, especially, more bad days than good days. And I think amazing entrepreneurs recognize that it takes way more work getting your ducks in a row than commanding them to line up. So the skills that actually really matter are grit, resilience, and hustle. And I would say that when I'm hiring for the startup, even today, even like 5 years later, we're well established and seasoned now. And I would say even then, the skills that I'm looking for are things like work ethic, attitude, resilience. And I think that matters to me way more than the fancy resume with bells and whistles. And you know what? I have a pretty incredible team and I give them all of the credit.
I love that.
So Anton, in our wonderful conversation, identified in the early days of Spin Master, they had a really, really small marketing budget. And so he talked about the importance of grassroots marketing. And that was back in 1994. And I know that grassroots marketing looks very different today. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on grassroots marketing for smaller businesses today that, you know, like Spin Master wouldn't have those large budgets starting off the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just noticing that like everything in terms of marketing, like the knife's edge on what's innovative and what isn't is just really, really tough. It ends up being this bit where you're not going to enter in this space and have a ton of budget. You're just going to be out there giving a lot of your money to Meta, et cetera. So I find that like some of the best, most innovative marketing, especially grassroots, is just community focused, building great communities, connecting with great audiences, finding your right cohort, and adding value and building these communities. And I think that as these communities grow, they get sticky. It's awesome. So
yeah.
I think it's a really kind of a simple fundamental. Find your people, convene your people, offer value to your people, and they'll help you find your people. And I think that that's something that we've been seeing with a lot of the entrepreneurs we're talking to. They're great at convening their community, and that's a superpower.
Thank you for listening to The Moment. We strive to bring you something different each week because we don't need another podcast with a bunch of finance bros sitting around their microphones talking about dropshipping. Just like the founders we interview each week, we're here for the real talk. Want more? There's an easy way to make sure you don't miss a new episode drop. Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts.
But don't stop listening yet. Please rate their podcast, review the podcast. We'd love to get the word out. So please let us know what you think. And don't forget to share this episode so that we can learn more from these incredible entrepreneurs and their stories from the moment everything changed.